Welcome to Hey Ghost Hey, the podcast about ghosts, ghost hunting, and other paranormal phenomena of the Pacific Northwest. I am your host, Charles Crooks, owner, tour guide, and psychic of Bellingham Ghost Tours. We are here because I like ghosts a lot. Now let's begin. Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Hey Ghost Hey. We are in Thanksgiving week here in the U.S., and I hope everyone has a safe and relaxing holiday, however that may look to you. As I always tell my tour goers, though, please no new ghosts. We have enough being created naturally, and we don't need to add to that with anything unnecessary or kind of dangerous there. So please be careful. And so for today's episode, I thought I would share with you some of my most asked questions from the tours and a few audience submitted ones as well. And so I always say that my favorite part of the tours is getting to meet people and to hear their experiences. So for tonight, I have a few of those exact people who I have become friends with. I first met Sam, Sierra, and Marcus over a year ago as they happened to be on my Fairhaven tour one evening, and so afterwards we went out for a drink together and we have been friends since. So it only seemed appropriate to gather them around the little seance table and have them ask the questions for today's episode. I am so grateful to them for doing this, and they were also at the Whidbey Island house with me when we had all of the activity in the basement last November. And so make sure you also listen to the end of this episode to hear about our experience with the ovulus after we finished our session recording together. All right, so time to dive in, and starting with very brief introductions from each of them, including where they stand on the paranormal. So here we go.
Hi, I'm Samantha. I have had a paranormal experience when I was a child. Probably around 5 or 6 was the first one. And I grew up in a house with people who loved watching ghost shows, so it's just been normal for me.
Hi, I'm Sierra, and very recently, I was laying down in a doctor's office, and I kept hearing meows, and when I looked around the room, I saw an actual ghost cat walk across the floor and out the wall, and it looked very real, so I like to believe for fun before, but now I believe for real.
And my name is Marcus. I can't genuinely think of a time where I had a paranormal encounter. There might have been some times with Sierra that I might have seen something or we experienced something together. But I definitely am interested in this world because, one, something that my wife really likes. But two, it is fascinating when you do have someone that has a really good story that does make you think about things.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And Samantha is going to start us off with our very first question. So here we go.
The first question is, what is a ghost and how do they show up in a way that we can sense them?
All right. That is a great question. So, well, let's start with what is a ghost. So I think the most typical way that we think of ghosts are that when you die, you might not necessarily go to wherever you believe in the afterlife is, but you end up hanging around here. And so I think that at least the most common way we think of ghosts, especially as far as Western culture is concerned, that once you die, that you have this energy, you have this soul, you have this spirit that remains afterwards and can interact with the living. But it might be on the same plane. It might not quite be. We don't really know kind of where they go in between. And there's all sorts of beliefs about it. And so as pretty much as a ghost hunter, there's a few different ways that we like to look for ghosts. We always try to see first, is it intelligent energy or is it residual energy? And so intelligent energy is something that you can actually interact with. It seems to give you intelligent responses and actually seems to have communication, whereas residual energy are kind of like energy echoes. So you might not have an actual kind of living spirit left behind. But you have energy that just kind of exhibits any way, shape, or form. So that could be like piano keys that you hear, or footsteps walking down a hallway, something that exists but doesn't necessarily interact with you. And so when I go on investigations, that's pretty much what I try to find out. Is it intelligent or is it just residual? Because I think that can make a very big difference in how we handle this and how we move forward with hauntings and how we try to change a space if need be. So, great question.
Hi, Chuck. This next question is, do you think ghosts have a choice as to whether or not their spirit moves on or stays behind?
Well, that is a good question, because I think that is something that people think about often, or at least I get that question a lot after the tours. And so I would say yes, that people do have choice when they die, if you want to stick around or if you move on. And so I really think that the soul's purpose is to move on, because I think, I don't know, just kind of having a one and done life, that you're not going to learn all that you potentially could learn in that one life. And so that's kind of why I like the idea of reincarnation and a soul going through all these different journeys and then kind of learning a bit, a little more each time or a little bit more each life. But I think that there are definitely souls that are not ready for that. And I mean, I think there's all sorts of reasons as to why they might not want to move on, but I think it is a choice, and I think that is a very conscious choice that we do make. And so I've always kind of wondered with that too, is if spirits do stay behind here, do they get to learn? Do they get to grow? Do they get to evolve like humans do? And that's something that I always kind of wonder about with language too, especially with all the recordings that I get, because there's a lot of modern language that comes through. And so if these are spirits from like the 1800s, are they evolving with us as they're choosing to stay here? Or are they kind of stuck as they are? And so at least in my psychic experience too, I really find that when people cross over or pass on, that there is this kind of awareness and learning. And even for those that have done very poorly in life, that there seems to at least be some sort of remorse and learning to move on from that, or at least some sort of growth. Whereas like typically earthbound spirits, we don't really see that growth. So if you died and you're kind of a shitty person, well, we typically see that tend to exhibit through the haunting as well. And one of my favorite examples of this is from the TV show that we were talking about earlier, Living for the Dead, The Ghost Hunters. It's a queer ghost hunting show that was on Hulu for a little bit. And they go, I think it was a strip club in Las Vegas, but they're using the ghost box and they have the gay F word come through as a slur. And so, I mean, that doesn't really seem like a very evolved being to me. So I always kind of wonder that if you do have that choice and stick behind, that maybe you don't necessarily get that capability to evolve and grow and change as a soul. And maybe that's a consequence of staying behind. I don't know. But I definitely do find, at least in psychic experiences, that the spirits that do seem to move on seem to have a lot more growth to them. So 'tis interesting in how that kind of exhibits and what we see that as.
So for the next question, it is, why does the energy stay behind? And another way to say that is, why does the residual energy, how does it show up for us?
Ooh, so that is a good question that I'm sorry to say we really don't have a good answer to. So it's kind of just all speculation at this point, as we haven't really had, as far as I know, any like deep scientific research into this kind of phenomenon, or basically how or why it exhibits. But a lot of people think that it's actually the geology of the Earth that holds energy and makes it kind of display and show up differently. I've heard that granite and limestone are great energy holders, and that typically when you see places with a lot of rock and foundations that are made of those stones, that you see a lot more haunted activity. So whether that actually does have anything to do with it, we don't really know. And so it's also kind of hard to say too, because when it comes to residual energy, we don't necessarily see it come up on command, or there's no real kind of trigger that we can point out as to what makes it come out, as like there's no real time of day. I know a lot of people talk about 3 a.m. is like the witching hour, but I also kind of think that we have activity around us all times of the day, that it's not just night. I think around night, and especially 3 a.m., we're just a little bit more aware of our dark surroundings and kind of what's going on around us. But I found that activity can happen any time of day and doesn't necessarily matter what time of day it is. Now, I will say too that we've seen interesting things. Actually, you guys saw firsthand when we were down at the Whidbey Island House, down in the basement especially. That was on a night of a full moon, and we also had a very stormy weekend that weekend as well. And so I've always kind of been skeptical about like the full moon enhancing things, or even like stormy energy enhancing things. But I think, especially after that night, that there is really something to that. Because every other time that I've been back to that location, we have not had repeatable results in the same way that we encountered that night together. And so what makes it different, I kind of have to just go on what we have and look at what was going on at that time. And so I think the full moon energy maybe did have something to do with it, or that storm energy that we had around us. Also, I think like just being the basement itself had a very different energy compared to the rest of the house. And this is something I was talking with someone recently. And why do we often find basements typically haunted? Well, I think with having that kind of displacement of earth, that you have a much more strong energetic cage, if you will. And so like with actually that earth energy around, I think that that even can make energy exhibit differently than what we might be used to. And so, again, I just kind of have to do my best guesses with my own experiences and what I see out there. But again, we really don't have any solid answers as to why things stick behind. So it's all just kind of guesswork right now. But I do think that there is something to energy of the land and energy of the water. And water is another, I guess, factor that holds energy differently and can enhance things. And so again, maybe that's why storms create more kind of ghostly activity. Maybe like water itself holds energy differently. Like, was it Frozen 2 that said water has memory, I think, as part of its theme in that movie? So I do think that there is some truth to that as well. But I do find it interesting, especially around, like I talk about this on the downtown tour, that around shipwrecks, they will get like EVPs and things from possibly the ships going down and stuff like that. So even we see hauntings in other environments that are not just land and not just structures either. So they can very much exhibit in nature as they do on land, or I'm sorry, in like cities. But yeah, we still don't know what actually makes these things kind of appear the way they do.
If someone were to die on the toilet, would they be pantsless forever?
Like Elvis, possibly?
Yeah, or other elderly people who have toilet-related accidents.
It happens, yes.
Even though silly indeed, yes, I think that is still a great question because that is something people do wonder about, actually. And you're not the first to bring that up. So I think, honestly, this kind of goes into our residual intelligent talk again. And so if you do pass away, let's say on the toilet with your pants down, if that was strong enough energy that got kind of stuck in time or stuck in that moment, I think, yes, absolutely, you will exhibit as a ghost with no pants. However, if you pass away and you remain an intelligent energy, I think if you have intelligence, you can look however you want. Because there's all sorts of stories of people coming back that
either look young or in the prime of their life. And we don't always see them as how they looked when they died. And so especially with intelligent energy versus residual, because that residual is really just that echo that's stuck behind. And so in that case, I think, yes, if you do have a traumatic enough moment, that is totally possible to leave that kind of echo behind. And so, yeah, who knows? Maybe Elvis is hanging out in Graceland on the toilet still. I've not heard any stories of that, but maybe worth checking out. But yeah, I still think, as funny as that is a good question, and people do wonder about that. Like, I have heard, what if I die in the shower and I'm completely naked? Am I forever a naked ghost? And I think that just kind of depends on how you exist as a ghost. So if you do have that kind of residual energy echo, I think it is possible to exist that way. But again, that doesn't have intelligence. It doesn't have that humanness behind it. And so it really just is a literal kind of visual echo if you do see that. So I don't think we should be fearful of any pantsless ghosts if we do encounter them. But that is just, if there's anything that I know for sure, is that we do see human activities even in ghostly activities. And that crosses over time and time again. There is a story I talk about from the Whidbey Island house as well from years ago. When I first investigated there, we had an investigator that had an SLS device. That's the one popular on the ghost shows where it shows little green stick figure. People realize that the Xbox Kinect camera can actually pick up possible energies and movements that aren't there. And so when it picks them up, it maps them out in a human-like figure. And so over there, we saw in one of the bedrooms, investigator saw on this device two stick figures. One was standing up. It looked like the other was kneeling in front of the other, and that they were wiggling a bit. And then it changed to, there were two horizontal stick figures on top of each other, and they were doing some more wiggling. And it swapped back from those two positions, from the standing kneeling into the horizontal ones. And we saw this happen quite a few times. So I think that, yes, we very much do see human activity in death as much as we see it in life. And so I just really think it's a good reminder that we don't have to find this stuff as scary, and that, yeah, we see humanness and we see life even in death.
So your response to the last question made me have a follow-up question. I have never heard of ghosts that may expose themselves to people. And I was thinking about this with the prior answer to one of your questions about if somebody is not a great person and gets stuck and then doesn't choose to evolve, if somebody did like to expose themselves to people, would they be able to or not? Again, haven't heard about any exposing ghosts before. But also, there are those stories about people who feel kind of, you know, violated by ghosts. So I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on that general, I guess, topic.
Absolutely. Yes, that I'm actually really glad that you brought that up, because not every ghostly encounter is pleasant. And there are so many stories out there of people, especially like in bedrooms or when they're traveling in hotels, that will feel random presences, like be very personal with them, whether that's touching them in intimate ways. I've heard stories. There was a woman on one of my recent ghost hunts where she talked about a story of something very much getting in her space and saying something in her ear that she felt very creeped out by. And so when I do find, though, that when we tell these energies to get out and to leave us alone, they do listen. And so that's something that we can touch more on later when we wrap this up. But it's, I'm not, I'm just going to pause, restart. But I do find that boundaries are very, very beneficial, and it's something that I've talked about quite a bit on this podcast already. And again, we can touch on the end. But I really do feel that they respond to us. And if you tell them no, if you really mean it, they will listen to that and leave you alone. So is it possible that we could have ghosts of bad people still doing bad stuff? Absolutely. But I think because of energetic laws, whatever those may be, if you really mean it, they will respond on an energetic level to you. So you do still have say in those kind of bad experiences. And you do still have power in those. And I think that Hollywood kind of makes it seem like we are powerless to those, or that you have to call in a priest or do an exorcism or do a full cleanse. But I think really us as energetic beings are the most powerful piece in that whole equation. And so if you mean it, they will listen and they will actually respond to that.
So Chuck, another question. Do you think ghosts recognize intruders in their own space?
Ooh, this is something that I actually do think about quite a lot, because whenever I do go ghost hunting, I will always say to the room and just kind of announce out that we cannot fully see these entities. We cannot fully hear them all the time. And so we don't necessarily know if they are experiencing us on the same level that we experience things, or maybe they even have kind of like a veil of experiencing the physical world that they might not get full access to. We really have no idea. And so I always kind of wonder that there is some sort of separation that kind of exists between the living and the dead. But at the same time, I do think that those that cross over do very much have kind of a clear access to us, especially if we are asking for them to be present. One of my very favorite things that I read, that Laura Lynn Jackson, she's one of my favorite psychics out there right now. She talks about asking from signs from the dead, and that we often do very still much have this very clear connection to our previous loved ones, and that they can still access us as long as we keep that path open as well. And so I think there's different levels to it, and I think that there's different levels of experience. But you might have a spirit, let's say from the 1800s, that is kind of stuck in maybe an awareness of their time, and they haven't really updated to where we are. And so that itself might be a very confusing experience for an entity. So I think that that kind of exists on all sorts of different levels, and we see it exhibit in all sorts of different ways. But as far as what determines that, we really have no idea. But all good things to think about for sure.
So next question, we all love animals, and I'm curious if you have ever had any encounter with a ghost animal or something of similar nature.
Yes, so actually one of my first ghost encounters ever was with a ghost cat. So I'm initially from Washington, but I grew up in the suburbs of Cleveland after I'd lived here for about 7 years. And then family moved out to the Midwest, and we had never had a cat, and the home that we had lived in was built brand new, so there was no reason for a ghost cat to exist, and especially in our family, any way, shape, or form. But there is, I should probably say when I was around a teenager, I would start to see this shadow of just something dark that would kind of dart from room to room. And then it progressed to kind of being able to see a black cat move from one side of the room to the other very quickly. But then one day, when I was home alone, I had this big dresser with a large mirror on it, and I was just standing in front of the mirror, and I felt something rub up against the bottom of my legs. And so I looked down, and for a split second, I saw the image of a black cat with its back arch, like how they kind of do when they come up to you and weave in between your feet. And it was only there for a very, very brief second, but it disappeared almost immediately. But I know that I actually felt the sensations of something physical on my legs. And I knew we had a dog at the time, and he wasn't anywhere around me. And even he would get up and growl at stuff out of nowhere. And my mom would always be like, oh, he's just having a nightmare. I'd be like, Mom, he's awake. He's very awake. And so he did very much seem to be aware of something in the home that we had really no sense of, but I was the only one that would really see it and encounter it. And it after that, we moved to the Chicago suburbs, and it did not seem to follow us. So it really did seem to be something with that land, with that house. And I really have no idea kind of why that got left behind there. But it was something that I encountered over and over again, and really was kind of the path that put me on into getting into ghostly stuff even more and wanting to seek this stuff out. So, yes, have seen ghost animal for sure.
So on the topic of animals still, I am curious if animals are more like psychically aware of their surroundings than people, and if you have a perspective on that.
Yes, basically, I do think that animals are definitely more aware than we are. However, I do think too that we often see little kids are a lot more open psychically than adults are, and so I think that, well, let's start with humans. I think as far as humans go, that everyone is psychic, but everyone has it on different kind of levels of ability. And so just like athleticism or like artistic ability, music ability, that you can have those natural kind of skills that you gravitate towards. And I think that being psychic is just another kind of aspect of self, and that people can be naturally good at, and some people have to practice at it. But I think when it comes to animals, I do think that they are more naturally aware. I don't know if I would say that they're maybe more psychic, maybe that their senses are just more enhanced than ours, and that they can pick up on different spectrums of light or different kinds of sounds. Like I think it's elephants that can emit infrasound, the really, really deep, low kind of sounds that we can't even hear with our ears, but it's a very strong sense of communication for them. And so we know that there are things like that that do exist in the real world. So I almost kind of wonder if animals are just more aware on a sense scale than we are, because I've definitely seen, like I talked about, my dog picking up on stuff. Also, I was just recently at my brother's house a few months ago. He lives down in Portland and lives in a kind of older historic home, definitely over 100 years old. And as I was just kind of sitting there, I felt something rub up against my legs. I thought it was his dog, and looked over to the side to see his dog several feet away. And he says that his dog sees stuff all the time in that home, and will focus on things like either up in the corner of the room, like somewhere where there shouldn't be anything. And I've heard of friends' pets doing this too, but they definitely seem to have a greater sense of awareness around us. And so I don't know if I'd say that's necessarily psychic, but I do think that psychic is kind of a natural sense that we do have, but we just fully don't know the extent and awareness of that yet as far as people go. So I kind of think that animals just have a greater sense of scale or scale of sense than we do. And I think that that's probably why that they can pick up on this stuff more.
What is one of the most impactful paranormal experiences that you've had, or one that you kind of come back to thinking about frequently?
Ooh, that is a very good question, because I do think that when people think of kind of the most impactful experiences, they often think of the scariest experience. However, I would say mine was actually a very loving experience. When my grandmother, she lived here in this area, when she was close to passing away, we had always been very close my entire life. And so when she was near, I would go visit her. She was at a nursing facility up in Linden. And I just remember one night I had gone up after work, and I was sitting by her bedside, and the room was completely dark. No one else was around us. And so I just kind of sat there with her. She was asleep, and I kind of felt this sadness and just kind of this fear about her passing. And even though I had all of this kind of spiritual experience, it still gets you. Like, even though knowing what death might be, or even having that kind of constant experience around it, it still doesn't prepare you for like the suddenness or the surprisingness of it. So I think I was just kind of going through my own feelings right there. And out of nowhere, on my right side, in my right ear, I heard my grandmother's voice, and she said, "Chucky boy, don't worry, I'm not in my body anymore." And I, of course, questioned whether I actually heard that or not, because I wanted to soothe myself, obviously, in that weird time. But I think that there was some very actual truth to hearing her and what she said. And so I've always kind of wondered how death works and like how the process goes. And I would like to think that the universe does have some kind of kindness to it, that when people are passing or when people experience extremely traumatic events, humans can be extremely terrible to each other and we can die in very awful ways. And so I often kind of think like, well, how do we even make sense of that tragedy on a spiritual level? But at the same time, I do like to think that maybe there is some glimmer of hope that the spirit kind of gets removed from the body, whether you're kind of going out peacefully or whether something bad happens. And so I don't know if that's me just trying to romanticize everything, of course, and trying to make death pleasant, but it had a giant impact on me and kind of really how I view death, and it's really taken away a lot of my fear of death from that moment. And so, I don't know, it's just kind of given me comfort over death and the whole process, which I didn't expect at all, and but it made her passing for me a lot easier. And to kind of go through that and to just, you know, maybe even, I don't know if it's true or not, but maybe there is some sort of peace in knowing that she was okay and kind of not stuck in her body or stuck in her physicalness. 'Cause I think that's worse than, I don't know, trying to, or being stuck in life and not being able to do anything about it, especially if you are that close and kind of on the edge. So I know I like to hope that the universe has some sort of kindness to it like that, and that we do see spirits get a little bit of peace before they go, even if something bad is happening. And I don't know. It's been impactful enough. So I'm super grateful for the experience, and just very, very surprised by it, but still very grateful for it.
Okay, Chuck. My question is, if you were a ghost, what is the first thing that you would do?
Ooh, so this is something I actually think about a lot as well. And there, it's kind of two parts. So one, I would haunt everyone that I love and play Enya through any sort of device just so they would know that I'm okay. That would be my little signifier. So if you hear Enya out of nowhere, it's just me. And number two, I would be so far off into the universe, into the galaxy, and just explore anything I can. I want knowledge. I want to know how everything works. I want to know what's out there. I want to know everything. So I am going on a grand, journey across the galaxy. If I have that freedom and choice, I am going to explore every intellectual possibility out there, because I want to know everything. So if I have that freedom, I'm gone.
And that feels like the perfect question to wrap everything up on today. First off, I would like to say a huge thank you to Samantha, Sierra, and Marcus once more for being here and helping me with this episode. I am so grateful to know them and have them as friends in my life. And as I had promised, one last thing before we go. After we had finished recording, this was at my home, so I live out on Squalicum Mountain, just outside of Bellingham city limits. I usually never have any activity in my home because I prefer it that way. Unless, of course, I have friends over to do this very thing, then I will intentionally lower my boundaries so only good-intentioned energies can come through and communicate. So we decided to pull out the Ouija board and play with the ovulus a little bit. So nothing happened on the Ouija board, sadly, so we turned to the ovulus to see if that would give us anything instead. We tried a few different modes with the device. First, we use the very popular dictionary mode, where you can have it spit out random words, supposedly of the spirit's own intentions to communicate. This mode provided its usual mixed results, where there wasn't anything 100% relevant or coherent to what was going on or what we were doing. So we tried the phonetic mode, where it can then spit out syllables of sound to build its own words. We thought there might be, have been a few responses that sounded like words or comments, but it really was guesswork on our end. And so, lastly, we decided to try a feature I have only played with a few times here and there, and that is called the Geoscope. So basically, the device can pick up on the slightest vibrations and turn that into a sound wave on the screen. It's very easy to set off and demonstrate how it works to others. So I set it on the table, knocked on the table, stomped my feet, and everyone could see the visual of my vibrations. So with everyone sitting completely still and aware of their movements, we started to get spikes on the device in response to our questions. Now, we could not feel or hear any sort of vibrations around us or anything that might have been causing this, but we could definitely see the response that was being picked up on the screen. And so it was almost as if someone was very, very gently tapping on the table in just very quick responses. So towards the end of our session, we were getting just the slightest of hits. But before we wrapped up, we asked for bigger hits in response, and the waveform actually changed from little to bigger spikes. And it was very exciting for all of us to see that actually change in response to our request. We unfortunately did not record this session at all, as we were just having fun, but I am definitely going to be using this mode more on upcoming investigations. I'm also greatly looking forward to the next time I can ghost hunt with Sierra, Marcus, and Sam and see what we have come our way again. I am actively working on the next batch of episodes and have a few things up in the air for the next one, so not 100% sure of what next week's topic will be just yet. I have started to digest the hours of the audio and visual recordings from the Manresa Castle. I must say it is providing some interesting orb activity on video so far, so I'm looking forward to that. But just a quick note on the light orb as evidence. I do see it as valid evidence of something. We have no idea what, but it is a sign of energy. So I used to dismiss them very quickly because there were lots of things that can cause them, from natural light reflections to other culprits like dust and bugs. But because we see the light orb phenomena in all spectrums of paranormal activity, I do think that it is worth paying attention to. So thank you, everyone, so much for being here. And if you have any further questions that you would like to ask, you can reach me always at bellinghamghosttours@gmail.com. And you can also find me on the socials on Instagram and TikTok at bellinghamghosttours. So thank you so much for listening and being open. And always stay spooky, my friend.